We are in negotiations at the moment with the police. We want this to be a peaceful, unobstructed march where we're able to get our message out to the people.
Another election is upon us. So Hearing Voices from NPR is throwing a political party. I'm Barrett Golding. In this next hour, we'll talk to people about politicians, to politicians about politics. We'll hear from college students in Chicago and citizen legislators in Montana's capital. We start in Salt Lake City with Scott Carrier. It's 2007, and Salt Lake's mayor is on stage about to debate Fox News host Sean Hannity.
It was in the air walking into the theater. Something I did not know by name, but it felt like there was a good chance the debate on stage was only going to be a setup for an actual fight among the audience. Truth be told, we don't like each other very much, us and them. We can be surprisingly civil in the grocery store or even on the road, but inside the theater, our contempt for each other was naked and exposed. Both sides had come for blood.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of the Associated Students of the University of Utah, we would like to welcome you to our campus and the beautiful, historic Kingsbury Hall. We would like to thank all the students.
The place was sold out and the seating was mixed, so Hannity supporters were sitting shoulder to shoulder with Rocky supporters, and everyone was checking out their surroundings, trying to read hairstyles and body posture, who is us and who is them.
And now the mayor of Salt Lake City, Utah, Mr. Rocky Anderson.
Suddenly, it was like, at last, it's on. There was a half minute of cheering, followed by a half minute of booing. And nothing had happened yet.
All right. Calm down. All right, there'll be time for that.
It is now my great privilege. Please join us in welcoming national television and radio host, Mr. Sean Hannity.
I looked around at all the Hannity people and started to count. Not just bodies, but overall poundage. So on my right, there were two married couples, mid-30s, maybe friends who'd left their kids with the same babysitter, clapping and cheering for Hannity. And behind, to my left, were five lesbians, like a rugby team, shouting, "Rocky, Rocky." It seemed the two sides were about even, and that everyone had gone equally crazy. Rocky went first. He had 30 minutes to lay out his argument.
We are in the midst of a tragic, disastrous, illegal war of aggression into which this nation was led by a disastrous presidency. Our nation is at a crucial point in our history.
Rocky's a civil litigator by training and profession, so his strategy was present the evidence. And he had a lot of it. He showed quotes from intelligence reports and played video of speeches, all up on the big screen with a PowerPoint presentation, like President Bush from 2002 speaking about Iraq.
It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons. If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Here's Rocky.
We were deceived. President Bush had no basis whatsoever for making those categorical statements. Because the Bush administration was not acting in self-defense, the tragic invasion and occupation of Iraq has been utterly illegal. It constitutes a crime against peace, the same crime for which people were convicted at the Nuremberg trial. Those costs of the war to the Iraqi people have been massive and tragic. The resentment, hostility, and hatred toward the United States causing even more terrorism, has increased dramatically because of President Bush's atrocities. The U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq has no doubt been the best terrorist recruiting tool bin Laden could ever have hoped for. Given the scale, frequency, and moral depravity of these outrages, President Bush must be held to account through impeachment and removal from office. If we do not call for accountability, we are complicit.
Let me explain something. Utah is about two-thirds Mormon, except for right here in the city of their most holy temple, where they're actually in the minority. Rocky was born into a prominent Mormon family, but as a teenager he crossed over and began to fight what he called the culture of obedience, people blindly following authority. He's never been able to handle it, and this is why we elected him as our mayor. It's also the reason we, or at least a lot of us, are so proud of him now. And it's why the rest of the state pretty much hates him. After Rocky, Hannity had his 30 minutes.
We got a lot of ground to cover. I want to thank the mayor for being here, taking time, especially out of his busy protesting schedule. I know he's been going around the country on his I Hate George Bush tour. It's nice to see him back in Salt Lake City a few days. And I wonder how much the people of Salt Lake City paid for that little PowerPoint presentation from the 1980s. Now,
Hannity didn't talk about the things Rocky had said, whether we were lied to or misled by the president, or whether the invasion of Iraq was a criminal act. Instead, he attacked.
Did you in all this talk about impeaching the president, all the platitudes, did you hear any solutions on how we're going to win the war on terror against people that want to destroy our cities? Did you hear anything about how to help our president win a war after one of the worst attacks in American history? Did you hear any praise for these brave men and women that, as we speak tonight, are in harm's way? Did you hear any talk about any success, how our troops are responsible for liberating 50 million people between Afghanistan and Iraq, women and children and men and women? Did you hear any discussion about how we close rape rooms and torture chambers and mass graves tonight? Or did you hear the same old predictable, I hate George Bush, George lied, George lied, George lied? It is the same thing.
Hannity's main point, and he said it over and over, was that there was nothing wrong with President Bush wanting to go to war with Iraq. Lots of Democrats wanted it too. He had video to prove it of John Kerry, Al Gore, Ted Kennedy, and Hillary Clinton.
Intelligence reports show that Saddam Hussein has worked to rebuild his chemical and biological weapons stock, his missile delivery capability, and his nuclear program. He has also given aid, comfort, and sanctuary to terrorists, including Al-Qaeda members.
Well done. And I will say this. If Rocky Anderson will not be equally intellectually honest and open and criticize the very same people that made the very same arguments, it's not George Bush who should be impeached or removed from office. It's your mayor. Thank you for hearing me out.
After the 30-minute opening statements, the next round was a question and answer period. Rocky got to ask the first question.
But we're going to start the clock right now. Mayor Anderson questioning Mr. Hannity.
We rely upon governmental leaders for our protection. Billions of tax dollars are spent for security, so we can be...
But instead of asking a question, Rocky made a 3-minute background statement, and this upset even some of his supporters. Finally, Hannity stepped in.
What's the question, Mayor?
I know you don't want to know what's in the rest of this memorandum, but this memorandum that laid out, it was a presidential daily brief.
Then the moderator jumped in, Ken Verdoya from the local public television station.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone, including Mayor Anderson, this is, by your agreed format, a question and answer period.
And
so I've got to call for the question.
So this memorandum, this brief, was given to the president. Mr. Hannity.
Rocky wasted a lot of time and energy throwing punches in the air while Hannity walked the stage, gesturing to the crowd, approaching the halfway line as if he was going to cross it. All Rocky had to do is calm down and listen. And when he did, he was able to land some shots.
This is a tough crowd. Here's a very simple question, no buildup. We saw a video tonight of the guy that you voted for president, and I read you the quotes.
I think you're wrong. You don't know who I voted for president.
Wait a minute. I've got a picture of you in your car with a John Kerry bumper sticker in the back.
Wrong.
That wasn't you in the car.
Never happened.
If you did not, nobody knows. Did you not support John Kerry? You didn't support John Kerry?
I did not support John Kerry.
Who did you vote for?
Because this, I voted for the Green Party candidate, Ralph Nader.
Okay. I'll stand. I will graciously concede the point he voted for the Green Party. But it
does. Is there a question?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the question. Here we come.
Here's my question. But in all my research of you, Mr. Mayor, you focus on one person, George Bush. I have never heard on the issues of weapons of mass destruction. You have never, in any press I have seen, asked for John Kerry to resign, Hillary Clinton to resign. You admired Joe Biden, you've said in interviews. You've said you admired the former Klansman, Robert Byrd. Why won't you, and here's my question, why won't you show intellectual honesty, and if you're going to demand that George Bush be removed from office, what about some of your Democratic friends who made the same arguments?
Okay. Do I get a chance to respond? I, as everybody here probably knows, and you say you've read my speeches, but apparently you haven't gotten through to the end, I think that our Congress is absolutely complicit. Those who voted for this resolution were wrong. And let me tell you, there was a national intelligence...
Should he resign? I ask, should he resign?
And I think every single senator that voted for that resolution needs to be asked two questions. Did you read the national intelligence estimate? And if not, why in the world not, with what was at stake? And if you read it, how could you have voted for that resolution?
Sometimes, though, in fact, too much, it got ugly. Bedoya, the moderator, tried to keep things in line, but there wasn't much he could do.
Opportunity for the question, Mayor.
He just said something. I want to respond to that. I want to respond.
I will let you do that.
Because I can't stop anybody.
You know something, Mr. Mayor? I would throw this watch away, but it was a gift from my wife.
I've researched you. I know you were out of town, 74 days out of the year last year? I know that you have a... Hang on.
You know, I knew you would do this.
Can I finish?
This is classic.
All right. Gentlemen, right now, we're going to freeze. I want to take a break. I do not want this to go any more personal. I want you to ask a damn question about Iraq, and I want you to answer.
I'm going to answer this question.
Get to the point, ask the question, find the bottom line, put it out there, and then you respond.
I was asking that question. He divides everybody, liberals, conservatives.
Now, the question, please, Mr. Mayor.
The question is, let me give the background.
When it was over, I walked home feeling tired, asking myself, what just happened? There was no knockout, no clear decision. Everybody came out thinking their guy had won. Nobody had changed their minds. And then I remembered there were two moments in the debate when everybody felt the same way, like what happens sometimes in a concert or a play. The audience becomes one emotion. It happened the first time when Rocky showed photos of dead Iraqi civilians, including bloody bodies of Iraqi children. Initially, the audience cried foul, you're hitting below the belt. But as the images continued, the room became quiet. Photos of dead children. Time stopped, thinking stopped. All that was left was the feeling, this can't go on. We have to stop doing this. It was like mass nausea. Then the screen showed a government document, and everyone snapped out of it. It went by so quickly. But then it happened again when Hannity showed documentary footage of dead Kurds, victims of Saddam's nerve gas bombings. Whole families lying dead in the street. Little kids, dead children. The room became like a quiet lake. And I thought, this is it. The solution lies here. Forget all the political arguments and just sit by this lake and try to figure out its name. The moon was nearly full. The city was going to sleep. Train horns spread out across the valley floor and rolled up the sides of the foothills. We don't like each other very much, us and them, but we have this lake between us, and now I think I know its name.
For 1,000 years I lay upon Lake Victoria.
Say that as we are land of the day, let me make it clear, we are not afraid to go to jail. We just don't want our message lost. So we are not afraid.
Ricky Lee Jones sang Nobody Knows My Name after Scott Carrier's report from Salt Lake City, produced in 2007 for This American Life. We're glad you showed up for our Hearing Voices political party. Even though politics can be frustrating,
put your hands together and let me hear you scream.
It can make you scream.
Let me hear you scream. Let me hear you scream. For peace, let me hear you scream. No more war, let me hear you scream. Come on, Bill. Which way are we going, Bill?
At least one presidential candidate got famous for screaming. Howard Dean.
We're going to South Dakota and Texas and New York.
It means that the rules that are done or written down are the ones that you have to obey.
Constitution.
We, the people of the United States,
in order to form a more perfect union,
establish justice,
ensure domestic tranquility,
provide for common defense,
promote general welfare,
and secure the blessings
of liberty
to ourselves
and our posterity,
do ordain
and establish this Constitution
for the United States of America.
A Constitution is a paper that tells us what we have, what we can do, and what we can't do.
A law that people have to follow by.
The Constitution was made for you, and friends, it was made for me. It laid down the law for the government and said all our people are free.
Freedom of speech and freedom of the press and to be free.
The right to vote.
You can say whatever you want to about anything.
You have the right to
go wherever you want, but you don't have exactly the right to break into people's homes and steal their stuff.
The right to bear arms and the right for free speech and the right to trial. The right so that soldiers some morning don't go marching into your house if there's a war and tell you to get in the back of the car and drive away with them.
If I made up my own Bill of Rights, I would have rights that kids didn't have to do their homework and that they can eat candy after 8 and they didn't have to go to bed when they were told to.
I'd make up one that it's against the law that no one can have slaves and we're going to feed a lot of poor people and try to keep them off the street unless they don't want to be off the street.
If I was going to write a constitution, I would, like, have kids go to school and not drop out.
I'd have a rule that you can't steal or burn someone's house down or just walk into someone else's house.
I would say you have the right to have a house and the right to buy things and not to be discriminated.
If I was to write a constitution, it would say that people couldn't kill each other for no good reason and that you couldn't start wars with somebody else unless the other person did something to you first, and that women and men have equal rights.
Constitution. It means that these are your rights and these are your privileges and that whether you like it or not, you got it.
Ain't gonna let nobody like you mean it. Turn me around. Turn. Ain't gonna let nobody. Gonna keep on a walking. Keep on a talking. Marching. One more time. Ain't gonna let nobody.
D'Mae Roberts talked with kids about the Constitution in 1986, and James Lilacs put music to Howard Dean's Scream in 2004.
Gonna keep on walking, keep on talking.
Coming up, we collect more political opinions from a Young Republicans meetup and a freestyle rap competition. That's in a minute when our political party continues on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Welcome back to the Hearing Voices political party. Producer Jonathan Menivar wondered what young people think about the elections. So we went around colleges in Chicago and asked them.
My name is Andrew Michael Renee Sellis, and I'm 16 years old. Today we're having a Young Republicans meetup here at Heartland Cafe in Chicago. I feel extremely strong about small government. I feel extremely strong about protecting our Second Amendment right. I feel extremely strong about the pro-life movement. I really think that politics is fun. I mean, as dorky or whatever you want to call it that sounds, people think of politics and they think of boring and distrustful. I like politicians. I'd like to be a politician one day, but I just feel that I want to have a say in the way our government is run. You know, a lot of people like to protest and get really angry on the streets. That's fine. That's their right as citizens, and but also let them get involved with government in the hardcore picking of public officials.
My name's Ian Tomley. I'm 22. I've been to WTO protests before. I worked for Food Not Bombs back in Ohio, and I'm pretty active in the anarchist community around here, at least when I have time. People definitely know now about the World Bank, the IMF, WTO, and all these organizations. And now they're trying to incorporate all North and South America under this agreement. It's just going to be like one big slave state. And I think they're raising awareness, definitely, because you're seeing protests all the time. Because I don't see any way around it. I mean, I vote. I'm not one of those guys who's like, my vote doesn't count, even though it sometimes really seems that way.
Suhasini Barani, I'm 20. I grew up in the Middle East, Bahrain. It's an island off the shore of Saudi Arabia. I haven't voted yet. I haven't registered to vote ever. And I could say in high school, no one ever talked to us about it a lot, so I never really had an interest in it, you know? I don't even know if I am a supporter of democracy or, you know what I mean? I think that if a majority of the people are voting for somebody, then I might as well put my vote towards that person, because one vote is not going to make that much of a difference. I know that sounds bad, but do you know what I mean? Whoever's popular at the moment might as well put it towards that person. If a lot of people want to vote for them, there's got to be a reason, so.
Jacob Stickhand, 23. I think people are, like, way more cynical now than back 50 years ago. I think even my parents, who were, like, huge hippies, they had their own American dream. Like, I see me and my friends not even having that. Like, at least, you know, they were like, oh, we're anti-Vietnam, we're anti-this. And now I think everyone's just kind of like, they're not even sure what to believe. I think every generation gets less and less sure about what they want to do and what they're supposed to do and where they're going. And I know I'm like that. I have no idea. Like, I'm almost done with college, and, like, I don't even know what I want to do, like, in the next year, like, where I want to go, who I want to support, whatever. I know who I don't want to support, but I don't necessarily know who I want to support. I just think people have lost faith in having a exact truths. They're not sure who to trust anymore or what to trust anymore.
I guess there's always a cynical viewpoint that, you know, politicians are liars, but I've actually worked in public fields and realized that politicians are not liars when they're not out to really destroy other people's lives. Politicians have a great power, and if they use it wisely, then they could be amazing people, and if they use it poorly, then we could have disastrous results. It all depends on their character and what they do. My full name is Pamela Calzaretta, and I'm 20 years old. I think the hardest thing is, like right now, I'm at a standards board for my sorority, and to go to people and say, hey, things need to change, most people think that you're just on a power trip. When you go in a position of leadership, you never come out with as much popularity as you went in the office with. But I would love to be a deputy press secretary one day. That's my ultimate career goal. I want to defend what I know is right in the politicians, and the other half is I want to be the little voice whispering in the air that says, hey, can you remember the communities too? I think it would be the best thing that I could ever possibly do with my life. I mean, given the talents I've been given, writing and speaking, and it's the only way that I'll ever be happy in my life is if I go in a career field like that.
I'm Nicole Waddington. I'm 19 years old. I feel that within the next couple of months, I really am going to get involved in a lot of politics, you know. I'm an artist, and I feel that a lot of what I draw and what I say and what I make kind of, I think it will have an effect on the government, you know. Freedom of speech. I mean, they made it, so why not take advantage of it? Right now, I'm kind of working on a comic book. It kind of has an urban point of view, you know, not just a regular superhero-type comic book, but something that actually relates to people, you know. I mean, when you get done reading my comic book, I don't want you to feel, oh, man, if only I can do that, when in actuality you can, because it's based on real life. Music, visual art, dance, anything, it definitely has influence. And the government will find ways to, you know, promote their propaganda, too. Look at World War II. They've made dozens and dozens of cartoons and songs, you know, to promote war and all that stuff. So I just want to tell people the truth. And the way I can do that is through my art, my music, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Diana Wheeler, and I'm 22. I grew up in a neighborhood that was very run down, and I basically got here through, I guess, something that's been debated in politics, like affirmative action. And I feel like I'm proof of the fact that affirmative action kind of works, because I've done better than many. I'm about to graduate. Yes, it was a long way, but I wouldn't have had the opportunity to get there had it not been for political things like that. But to be perfectly honest, I don't like politics at all. at all. There's really, I'm in college, I'm trying to finish my major. There's no reason why I should be actively involved besides I vote. I do my basic duty. Everything that means anything takes place beyond the scope of what I can do. So I can't change any laws. I can't make anything different. If there was some way that I knew that I could get involved and make a difference, I would.
There's something happening when Americans who are young in age and in spirit, who've never participated in politics before, turn out in numbers we have never seen, because they know in their hearts that this time must be different.
Me and all my friends, we're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. We keep on waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. Waiting on the world to change. Waiting on the world to change.
That's what's happening in America right now. Change is what's happening in America.
Let me tell you. How it will be is one for you, 19 for me. I am the tax man, tax man, tax. I am the tax man, tax man, tax, 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 tax man.
Should 5% appear too small, be happy I don't tax at all.
I am the tax man, tax man, tax. I am the tax man, tax man,
tax man.
If you drive a car,
drive,
I will tax Main Street. If you try to
sit, listen now,
I will tax your
seat.
If you get too
cold,
I will tax the
heat.
If you take a walk,
I will tax your
feet. I am the tax man, tax man, tax. I am the tax man, tax man, tax, 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 tax man. One of the unique and wonderful things about America has always been our self-reliance, our rugged individualism, our fierce defense of freedom, and our healthy skepticism of government.
Don't ask me what I'm for.
Mr.
Wilson,
if
you don't want to pay some more,
Mr. Heath, I am the tax man, tax man, tax. I am the tax man, tax man, tax, 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 tax man.
Now my advice to those who die,
declare
the pennies on your eyes.
I am the tax man, tax man, tax. I am the tax man, tax man,
tax man. And you're all working,
working, working, working,
work, work,
work, work,
working,
work,
working,
work,
working,
working for nobody
but me.
Tax, tax, tax,
tax, tax man.
Two views of the Obama administration. That mix of John Mayer's Waiting is on the Yes We Can CD, and Obama the Tax Man is from producer RX at thepartyparty.com. Those Chicago college students were from a 2004 Chicago Matters documentary called Dreams of Democracy. Politicians are always trying to sell us on something. Why don't they just sing to us?
Mr. Gingrich, what do you think about Obama wanting to cut down on nuclear weapons in the key of C? And go.
I just think that's very dangerous to have a fantasy foreign policy, and it can get you in enormous trouble.
What's wrong with fantasy?
My name's Evan Gregory.
I'm Michael Gregory.
We play in a quartet called the Gregory Brothers. It's also comprised of our other brother, Andrew, and my wife, Sarah Gregory.
Going home crying.
Congratulations, Wayne. I know you're emotional. Talk about what this feels like.
As a software tool, autotune is used throughout the recording industry to move notes around a little bit so that they conform to a scale. Then more recently, it's been used as a kind of elective effect. If you turn it up to 9 or 10, you're now actually making a person's voice sound very angular and robotic.
Most Americans believe that this country was gifted by God, a blessed nation, and that we are better.
Yeah, we the promised land, a sacred place, getting blessed by Joe Biden from space.
Hey! God bless America!
Kind of hit on the idea of we could actually use this recording technology to make them not just speak to us, but sing to us.
Do you realize if you were to take that lettuce, dry it, and roll it, and smoke it?
Representative Stephen Beyer is discussing tobacco legislation, and he's saying that it's not nicotine that does damage to your body, it's just the smoke itself.
It's not the nicotine that kills, it's the smoke, the smoke.
And we took that and turned it into this beautiful refrain.
It's the smoke. It's the smoke. The smoke.
That became insanely popular with our audience.
It's the smoke. The smoke.
The more products we come across, the more problems we see.
This was a pretty remarkable week on the gay marriage front. First of all, to have a state like Iowa.
What you trying to say about Iowa?
Not an East Coast state.
East Coast.
Not a West Coast state. In a decision written by a Republican appointee.
The gay marriage panel discussion was really the scene that I think kicked it off for the Auto-Tune the News viral sensation.
It's Ruth Marcus from the Washington Post that started with the East Coast, Left Coast.
Yeah.
So I just have to echo that back to her.
He's commanding them to be more catchy in their news. He's saying, this is outrageously boring. Can we not just please sing about this?
At the North Pole, new satellite photos show Arctic ice is melting so fast.
Politicians often have to be good speakers. And if you're a good speaker, you're a good unintentional singer. And that also goes for news anchors. For example, Katie Couric. That slow cadence she has to her voice, very deliberate, makes her rhythms outstanding.
With temperatures rising even faster, if we all don't take bold action and take it soon,
yeah,
we will find ourselves on very thin ice.
Very thin ice.
Very thin ice.
Katie Couric right now, I would say, is the queen of autotune. I would go so far as to say that Joe Biden is her male equivalent.
There will continue to be job losses the remainder of this year. The question is, will they continually go down before they begin to rebound? Before they begin to rebound, will they go down, down before they begin to rebound?
Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time.
Music is at kind of the heart of what we do, so we have found famous speeches, and then we back them up with a band from the future, as we call it, and turn their speeches into auto-tuned anthems.
To the solid rock, the brotherhood. Now is the time, now is the time. I have a dream, every valley shall be exalted. I have a dream, every hill and mountain shall be made low.
Martin Luther King Jr., I think, has the greatest autotune voice ever.
Not only is he speaking poetry, but he also has this naturally clear, ringing voice. He's projecting just like a singer.
The crooked places will be made straight. That is something that I must say. We cannot turn back. I have a dream today.
Lift up your heart. All will come right.
What I liked about doing Churchill's speech is that that's really a speech not many people have heard, so it exposed a lot more people to it.
The glory of mankind. This is the message. To all the states and nations, bond or free.
News. There is a lot of news, and it's happening. Justice Souter is retiring. There's a swine flu pandemic. People are turning into pigs. Michelle Obama. She's wearing a cardigan.
You know, Jonah Plum is making headlines.
You can kind of get a sense in watching the videos that we're kind of poking some fun at the 24-hour cable news cycle.
You guys, this is not making any sense at all. Can you please just sing about it?
They know where I stand.
I think this is an ignoramus statement. I was even a person who thought, you know what, power to Jonah Plum at that point.
People are always trying to come up with a powerful speech or soundbite in the same way that musicians are trying to come up with hooks or choruses for their songs, so we're basically connecting the dots.
As Republicans, the party does seem to be in chaos. They need to change their attitude.
In the Rachel Maddow Show, she asks Ron Paul, what can Republicans do to get back on track?
When they talk about personal freedoms, they have to believe in it, you know.
So we grabbed a hold of that word, believe in it. And Ron Paul became this amazing senior citizen diva.
And as usual on the Auto-Tune News, Rachel Maddow and I are so inspired that we have to start singing along.
Yeah, any message, of course, is delivered more effectively when harmonized in thirds.
We've got some breaking news. Let's go to Tracy Byrne. She's got all the news.
Actually, Liz, I think you want to jump up to Robert.
A new story had broken. but as the breaking news was issued to the anchors, they actually didn't have any more information than simply the headline, Supreme Court issues stay on Chrysler.
Nicole don't know, let's throw it to Joe.
I'm trying to get a hold of this myself. Breaking news, guys. I don't have it, Liz. I have to send it back down to you, I'm afraid.
But the basics of it is, clearly, this is a fascinating story.
Magical.
That we're going to get all into place at just the moments, as soon as we can get everything here.
Bum, bum, bum.
God bless America!
The anchor really used our favorite rhetorical inference, where she says, clearly, this is a fascinating story.
Yeah, good point.
We don't know what it is, but
clearly, to indicate something that is not clear at all.
The smoke, they want to attain their nicotine, it's okay. It's the smoke, the smoke.
Lift up your heart. All will come right. Out of the depths of sorrow and of sacrifice will be born again the glory of mankind. This is the message to all the states and nations, bond or free. We cannot yet see how deliverance will come or when it will come. But nothing is more certain than that every trace of Hitler's footsteps, every chain of his infected and corroding fingers, will be sponged and purged, and if need be, blasted from the surface of the earth. This then, my lords and gentlemen, is the message which we send forth today. Lift up your hearts. All will come right. Out of the depths of sorrow and of sacrifice will be born again the glory of mankind. This is the message to all the states and nations, bond or free. Lift up your heart. All will come right. Out of the depths of sorrow and of sacrifice will be born again the glory of mankind. This is the message to all the states and nations, bond or free.
You are attending the Hearing Voices political party. That was Winston Churchill, auto-tuned by the Gregory Brothers. Do music and politics mix? Let's follow Jonathan Menjivar as he continues his campus tour of Chicago. Next stop, a freestyle rap competition at Howard Washington College.
Melvin Hayes, 19. I rap about, like, black history, and I might write about life and stuff, but the what people in here is money, girls, sex. You know what I'm saying? I rap about that. Because that's what sells. That's what today's society is all about.
This is E-Baby. I'm 21. Democracy. Me, myself, I don't know too much about democracy. Politicians. I mean, it's all for the money, I think. Everything for the money. Yeah, I'm gonna vote, most likely. I might even try to get somebody else to vote. Come on, let's go vote. Get up out the bed. That's the whole problem right now. All the black people in jail. And then the ones who can vote, they don't even vote. They be too lazy to go to the poll. So, you know, we're missing out on a lot of votes. As long as you speak, your voice gonna be heard. A lot of people don't speak.
Hi, my name is Kenneth Harris. I'm 23. I just got out of prison. I did 3 years. You know, shout out to everybody in Stateville. I want to be a rap star. That's the American dream to me, to be a rap star, to have ice, to drive the best car. Me voting, it took me to get older to realize what voting really meant. It's going to be all right. I'm going to focus on my world, me and my little space right now, so I can try to expand. I want to be somebody one day. Make sure I make it first, and then I could probably talk about democracy. Who in the hell want to hear somebody just rapping about politics?
The judges have made a decision. The king rapper of 2004, Hell Watching Power, is both of his brothers, $150 apiece.
In Montana, where I live, the state legislature meets only a few months every 2 years. The rest of the time, they're just regular folk. When they were in session, I went to our Capitol building in Helena to talk with these citizen legislators.
My name is Brady Wiseman. I was raised in a military family. Later on, as an adult, I wound up working on Wall Street, several brand name Wall Street banks, doing computer work. I'm not a banker, I'm a computer guy. So I've been aware of how the securities industry works and how fake it is. They're trading paper that's based on nothing except belief. Wall Street does not create wealth. All they do is transfer wealth from one place to another. And at this point, they're transferring all the nation's wealth into their hands and then making it disappear. I mean, they've hollowed out the country. You know, there's a great phrase in the Declaration of Independence regarding the British. They have eaten out our essence. And that's what Wall Street has done to this country. They have eaten out our essence. What happened was not socialism. It was a merger. It was the completion of a 30-year hostile takeover of the American government by Wall Street. They have the power to get the American people to give them $5 trillion. How did that happen? Without a peep. Congress did not even wrestle with them. They're telling auto workers, you know, people that take a shower after they get home from work, you have to take a pay cut. But they wouldn't dare tell the bankers who take a shower before they go to work, you have to take a pay cut. So ultimately, the financial system we have is not sustainable. So any system that's not sustainable will come to an end one way or another. It won't be planned. It won't be pretty, but it will come to an end. So it's up to the rest of us to figure out how to persist and carry on.
I'm Jonathan Windy Boy. I'm a member of the Chippewa Cree tribe from Rocky Boy, Montana. I'm 50 years old, and I'm an elected tribal councilman as well. I think that the United States needs to recognize what was here before the United States became a union. If people want to learn about history, and they say that when America was born 200 years, well, what happened 400 years ago? They act like somewhere out of the blue, some aliens put people on this continent here, when actually there were people that lived here, inhabited this land thousands and thousands of years. In 1492, there were 25 million people on this land. And there was a governmental structure that was put in place here before that. And that's what the Constitution is based upon, the Iroquois Confederacy called the Wampum Belt. And when Ben Franklin, John Hancock, and those guys went over to live with those Six Nations, they grasped that democratic system set up. That's what they based upon that. But nobody, they don't mention that, you know, when you're talking about the Constitution, because it was based upon a natural way of life, a natural law that was given to us from a higher power. And that's what we try to live by today. And nobody's going to take that from me. No government, nobody's going to take those values from me.
I'm Janet Taylor, and I work for the citizens of House District 11. Part of House District 11 is on the Flathead Indian Reservation, and there's a big lake in the middle of my district, Flathead Lake. It's 27 miles long and 15 miles wide, and there's little towns along the lake, Big Arm, Elmo, Rollins, Dayton, Summers, Lakeside. You know, one of the reasons we're conservative up here is because we're on that take care of yourself, take care of your family and your neighbor, but take care of yourself. And with that old pioneer spirit, we're kind of ornery and independent. I'm not sure that the way we do politics is working, and I don't ever mean to blame the media, but what happens is we elect the better looking person. Would anyone ever vote for Abe Lincoln today? I'm telling you, absolutely no way. That guy was such a nerdy, ugly guy. I believe Ronald Reagan was a great president, but I think he was a perfect example. We are going to get more actors and more comedians. Thank you, Al Franken. We're going to get more ex-news people. It's now not about the substance, it's about the appearance. So now we're all about the show and not about the facts.
Yes, I'm Pastor David Eslick. I'm here in Helena, Montana. We're here in our church. It's called Worship House of the Rockies. As a pastor of this church and the way the Bible is broke down, the way I read it, it doesn't matter who the president is. When God's return comes, it doesn't matter who's sitting in that office. God has the right people in the right spots to fulfill the scriptures. It doesn't matter who's sitting in Congress. It doesn't matter who's sitting in the Senate. When God says time is now ended, guess what? Time's now ended. Doesn't matter who's sitting there. You've probably heard it all your life. Jesus is coming. Jesus is coming. They heard it back in the first century. Jesus is coming. Well, we're in the 21st century now, and still Jesus is coming. When we see those things happening, just look around. If you read the book of Daniel and you read the book of Revelation, it clearly will show you where we're at today on a timeline even. All I can tell anybody else is the Bible says to look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. I believe we're in the last days. So from my point of view, I look forward to it. And I hope everybody is ready to go.
Here's a story. I was reading the Bible some years ago, the Old Testament, and I read the most amazing thing in the law of Moses. Moses decreed that there would be a jubilee year every 50 years in which all economic activity would cease and the people would spend a year in spiritual reflection and fasting and feasting, and all debts would be canceled. The key economic factor is that in the Bible, it says that every 50 years, all debts will be canceled. I think that is genius economic policy. And we are actually going through a kind of a jubilee in America. We have built up this fantastic pyramid of debt, and it has to be washed out. And if we can have a jubilee and start over, then we will survive and prosper. And maybe that is the hope of the Obama administration. The stealth jubilee.
That's it for this year's political party. Hope these elections don't put you in a post-party depression. I'm Barrett Golden, coming to you from Peak Recording in Bozeman, Montana. Links to all the producers whose work you heard this hour are at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.